I'm really enjoying the theme for this year, to think of the prospects of being partakers of the divine nature. That's pretty exciting, to think of the fact that God wants us to partake of His divine nature, to become like Him. And in addition to that theme, then through this year, Greg has suggested that we develop month by month the Christian virtues mentioned in 2 Peter chapter 1. And as you know, this month we're studying about virtue. And so my lesson tonight is about virtue, and particularly Jesus as paragon of virtue. So I want you to concentrate with me on thoughts about virtue, and particularly as they relate to Jesus Christ our Lord. Jesus, of course, is the paragon of virtue. He is the peerless example. There is none greater than He, and we have just sung sentiments about that. And so we take Him as the supreme, as the peerless, as the paragon of virtue. All that we can say about that wonderful quality of manly excellence, of moral courage, of the power to do that which is good and right, is found in Jesus. Now, obviously, in a single lesson, you could but touch the hem of the garment, as it were, as we talk about Jesus and all of the ways in which He will illustrate in His life the quality of virtue. And so, as you think about Jesus and what He was not, Jesus was not those opposites of virtue. He did not wait to see which way the wind was blowing and then make up His decision as to where He stood on anything. Some years ago, there was a political candidate who openly said that his staff sampled public opinions on many issues, and having determined what the majority of the public believed about that, that became his position. And so he believed whatever the majority of the people believed. Now, if those were good and wonderful qualities, that's not bad. But that tells you something about that individual. Quintilian, I believe it was, one of the Roman rhetoricians, said of a person who would speak that the ideal speaker was an individual who was a good man speaking well. And Jesus was that, because He spoke and He acted as no man before or after Him. And we'll be talking about that tonight, the Lord willing. The virtue of Jesus is revealed in His words and in His deeds. You read through the life of Jesus, and everywhere you see His moral courage. He did not hesitate before threats, before disagreement, before the fact that He knew that they would ultimately take Him and would crucify Him. And so Jesus certainly is the peerless example of virtue. As we think about virtue, I want us to look at three things tonight. One is His virtue in speaking. Secondly, His virtue in silence. And then in the third place, His virtue in suffering. Jesus showed virtue all of the time as He spoke to people. You read through the Gospels and see in the life of Jesus that Jesus constantly said things that people did not agree with, that were against their cherished beliefs. We tend to size up a person in the first few minutes as he or she speaks to us. And it is said of Jesus that never man spoke as this man, that He taught them as one who had authority and not as the scribes. And so He did not just quote what other men said and had said, but Jesus spoke to people exactly what they needed. And of course, being the Son of God, He knew what was in man, but He did that without any kind of fear. And so the common people heard Him gladly. The writer of Proverbs said that a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pitchers of silver. What a wonderful thing it is to say just the right thing. And the task of our lives as we interact with other people, and particularly those who teach and preach, is to work to try to say the best possible thing under every circumstance. What a challenge to do that. And Jesus did that absolutely perfectly. Jesus fitly spoke in everything that he did. I want to use from the 11th chapter of the book of Luke, in verses 53 and 54, a beginning thought about his work. This passage from the Gospel of Luke says that as he said these things unto them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to urge him vehemently and to provoke him to speak of many things, laying wait for him and seeking to catch something out of his mouth that they might accuse him. Now, they were of the opinion that if we get him to talk about a lot of different things, that invariably he will make some sort of slip, he will make a mistake, and we can catch him in his words. They were dealing with him as one would deal with a human being. And if we speak very long, people are going to see errors or inconsistencies, or if they know us well, perhaps hypocrisy and a difference between what we say and what we're doing. And so they figured if they could get him to talk enough, that they would be able to catch him in his words. Well, of course, they were unable to do so. And so Jesus was able to pass that test, as it were. Now, over in the 17th chapter of the Gospel of John, as Jesus prayed, he said an interesting thing in recorded in verse 8 of John 17, that I have given unto them the words which thou gavest me, and they have received them, and have known surely that I came out from thee, and they have believed that thou didst send me. And so Jesus thanked God and affirmed that he had spoken the words that God had given to them. This, of course, is very near the end of his life. And as he looks back over his life and thinks of all the thousands and thousands of words that he has spoken, he said, you gave me the words. I have faithfully delivered those words unto the people. Jesus was virtuous in his speaking. I tried to think of illustrations of the very best thing that we could go to think about virtue in Jesus speaking. And I decided that we'd talk just for a little bit about the Sermon on the Mount. And so if you would look at the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7, we'll be touching just some verses in those chapters as we look at a way to study the virtue of Jesus. First, I'd like for us to look at those statements that you might label as you have heard. These were cherished views of the people to whom Jesus spoke. They were things they really believed, things that if they were making a list of important topics to teach on, they would have listed these things. And so Jesus went to the heart of their teaching, the things they were talking about, the things they were thinking about day by day, and he showed that each one of those still needed some work. For example, in verse 21, you have heard that it was said of them of old time, thou shalt not kill. And whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. And then Jesus went on to teach them that, of course, that is right and that was wrong. It was a sin to kill other people. But Jesus said, beyond that, the person who is angry without a cause, the person who shall say certain words to other people, shall be in danger of the council and, in fact, may be in danger of eternal punishment. And so Jesus showed them that there was truth beyond what they were currently teaching. Now, it takes a lot of courage to do that. It takes virtue to say, you've gone so far, you need to go a bit beyond that in your teaching and in your practice. Now, look at verse 27. You've heard that it hath been said of them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you, whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her, hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. And so Jesus moved it just from the outward act, the deliberate act, to the sentiments of one's heart. And when we read that and we think of our current day, that's pornography. That's lusting, even though a person might make the argument, I'm harming no one. I'm just looking at this, enjoying this. Jesus said, it's a sin. You are building lust in your heart. And you have already committed adultery in your heart with an individual as you look with pleasure upon that. And there's the sin of pornography. And it is a plague upon our society and is affecting the homes of Christians everywhere. And so we need to teach and preach and encourage young people not to ever begin to deal with that. And not just boys and men, but also women are involved in that. And so Jesus moves beyond the outward act to the actual desire from which the act comes. And so he said the problem must be dealt with in the heart of the individual. Took virtue to do that. In verse 33, you've heard it said by those of old time, thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shall perform unto the Lord thine oath. In other words, keep what you swear to do. Jesus went beyond that. He said, you need to be the kind of character that when you say yes, it means yes. And when you say no, it means no. And you don't have to back it up by swearing by God or the temple or anything else. You be the kind of character and you have the kind of reputation that individuals will know that when you say yes, that that is true. And when you say no, that that is true. In verse 38, you've heard that it hath been said of them of old time, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, resist not evil. And if any man, and he goes on to tell them that they are to actually not return in kind. The Old Testament law gave them the right to take an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But he said, I'm saying you do not resist evil, that you rise beyond mere retribution. You rise beyond merely returning in kind what other people do for you. We don't make any progress if we just do back to that person what they have done to us. And so Jesus challenges them to rise above that kind of behavior. Took virtue to say that. Verse 43, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you. Jesus said this is the attitude that you're to have rather than just loving your neighbor and hating your enemy. In each one of those illustrations, Jesus took teaching that was favorite teaching of theirs and shows them that they need to go beyond that. It took great moral courage for Jesus to do that. In the sixth chapter now, similarly, Jesus in verses 2 and 3 shows them that in the giving of their alms, they are not to do that in such a way that they are making a great show before other people. In fact, he said, if you do that and people notice that, then you have your reward. But when you do that, let not your right hand know what your left hand doeth. And so Jesus said the purpose is to do good and to God alone will know that. And if other people find out, that'll be all right. But you're not to do it with the motive that you are attracting attention to yourself. Similarly, in verses 5 through 15, Jesus warns against hypocrisy in prayer, to pray in the corner of the street in such a way that people will notice and say, what a holy person this is. But rather you are to go into your closet. You are to pray in private, and God will see that and will hear that. And so our prayer is to be between us and God. And then he gives a sample prayer. And he says, do not engage in vain repetition. God isn't interested in the length of your prayer. And maybe some of the finest prayers you'll ever pray, the most earnest prayer, will be a sentence. And so may God help us as we think about the courage of Jesus as he taught them about prayer. In verses 16 through 18, Jesus told them about fasting, and he said the custom is that people fast in such a way that people are able to observe. They disfigure their appearance. They make it very obvious that they are in a period of fasting and they are indulging in this sacrificial act in order to deny themselves food for a while in order to draw closer to God. Jesus doesn't condemn the fasting, but he said it isn't to be done, to be seen of men. And so when you fast, wash your face, anoint your head. People will not know you're fasting. You will know, God will know, and you'll be blessed in that. And so in every illustration that he gives here, and in those passages there, I'll not take time to go into detail, verses 19 through 34, Jesus talked to them about their attitude about things. And in every case, he is showing tremendous virtue as he addresses their favorite teachings. In the seventh, the third chapter in Matthew that deals with us in the Sermon on the Mount, in their judgments of others, verses 1 through 5, Jesus says, begin with yourself. If you are going to analyze fault, then you begin with yourself. Look, before you are able to pick the mote out of your brother's eye, at the beam that is in your own eye. Jesus then, with great courage, talked to them about the things that were in their hearts that was causing their religion to be a facade. It was causing outward conformity to the law, but their hearts were not right. And so Jesus, in speaking over and over again, shows his virtue. Now, how do we apply that in our lives? How do we, from the example of our Lord, come to have virtue in our speaking? Well, much of what we learn and what we do comes through imitation. And it is very good for us to think about Moses and Elijah and John the Baptist and Peter and John, as well as our Lord, and think about the fact that they said what needed to be said regardless of the circumstances and regardless of the consequences. And so they were not afraid to say what needed to be said. May God help us to do that and to be that way. As we deal with sin in our families, as we deal with sin in the church, as we deal with error, as we deal with all kinds of things, to have the courage to say what needs to be said. Longfellow said that lives of great men all remind us we can make our lives sublime and departing leave behind us footprints on the sands of time. And there have been a lot of great examples and Bible examples and secular examples that help us to see the courage of those who are willing to speak out. In the book of Philippians, chapter 4 and verse 8, you are all familiar with the passage that says, finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, pure, lovely, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things. There is a principle of thought and character that the things on which we concentrate and think about tend to affect our being. It tends to affect our character. And thus Paul says to the Philippians, think on these things. And so our privileges as we come together to worship and to serve God, as we try to associate with good people, as we study Jesus and Bible examples, as we think on those things, then it helps us to be like that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13, Paul said, quit you like men, be strong. That's virtue. That's manliness, not in a male sense, but in a courageous sense, moral excellence. It is the notion of having the courage to put our faith into action. In the fourth chapter of the book of Ephesians, Paul deals with that as he talks to the Ephesians and encourages them in these words, that you henceforth be no more children tossed to and fro and carried about with every wind of doctrine and sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive, but speaking the truth in love may grow up into him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. And so our growth be toward maturity involves growing in courage, growing in virtue. And may God help us to do that as we think about these wonderful examples in the life of Jesus. Jesus showed great virtue in his speaking. There he is. Well, I punched the wrong button there. There is, however, a time to keep silence. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 7, a time to speak and a time to keep silence. Jesus showed virtue in silence. Now, it's hard to know, as we've talked about, how to speak and when to speak. And it is the development and study of a lifetime for Christians to try to develop that. But there is a corresponding virtue in knowing when not to speak, when not to say a word. And Jesus did that perfectly. He showed virtue in keeping silence. I want to use just two examples about that. Jesus showed virtue in keeping silence. And over in the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John, they brought to Jesus, the scribes and Pharisees, a woman, verse 3, taken in adultery. And they set him in the midst and said, Master, this woman has committed adultery. And very act. Moses told us we needed to stone her. What do you say about that? Well, they thought they could trap him in this. And verse 6 says they said these things, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. Jesus stooped down and wrote on the ground as if he had not even heard them. Didn't say a word. And they kept asking him that. And finally, he lifted himself up. And he said, he that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone. Now, that was part of the old law. When you brought an accusation against a person that might result in death, then the accusers, once the decision was made that it was a capital offense worthy of death, the accusers were to cast the first stone. And so Jesus was quoting back to them their own law. And so he said that, and then he was silent again. Stooped down, rolling around. And the record says, when they heard this, being convicted by their own conscience, they went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even to the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. And Jesus said, Woman, where are your accusers? And hath no man condemned thee? And she said, No man, Lord. He said, Neither do I. Go and sin no more. He did not gloss over her sin. He did not suggest that the accusations were wrong. He told her she needed to stop sinning. And the point is, Jesus' silence forced them to look within themselves and to realize that they themselves were guilty of many sins, and perhaps this very sin. And so there is power in knowing when to speak and when not to speak. I have a wonderful friend in Athens for many decades. Roger Witt has been an outstanding bricklayer and did the biggest, most expensive houses in Athens. Great demand. Certainly one of the best in the area for many years. And when his father died, he called me and asked me to help with the funeral, and so he told me some stories. And we sat and talked, and he said, when he began to lay brick, his father, who was a bricklayer before him, came out one day, and he was so proud of some work he had done. He had done a little wall and thought it was very good. And he stood there as his father looked at that, and his father didn't say a word, just walked over and put his foot against it and knocked that wall down. He said it broke his heart, did he? It was, the mortar was still wet and that wall crumbled. And as he turned to walk away, he said to Roger, "You'll figure it out." And he said from that day on, as he did his work, often his father would show up and would just look, and wouldn't say a word. But he studied and became a perfectionist in his work because of his father's silence. He figured it out. And there are a lot of things that we need to figure out for ourselves. And once we've made a point, or once we have made an appearance, if we can hold our tongues, then we can figure it out. Jesus was an expert at that. And these people in this example here, in John chapter 8, they figured it out and realized they did not have grounds on which to speak. And therefore, silently, they went out one by one. But you remember probably best during Jesus' trial that again and again and again, Jesus was silent. It amazed Caiaphas, the chief priest, and elders, Pilate, Herod, because he would not speak. He said a few things, but mostly he just listened to their accusations and did not reply. There was a majestic silence in Jesus as they made all of these accusations, as they contradicted themselves, as they went through this mockery of a trial, or series of trials. And so Jesus was silent. Jesus knew their motives, and so they marveled at his silence as all of this was happening. James says, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath." I hope you'll study about that. There's virtue in knowing when it is best to say nothing and to let it be and let people figure it out. In Proverbs chapter 10, verse 19, "In the multitude of words there want us not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise." Finally, Jesus showed virtue in suffering. He suffered so much. He suffered over Capernaum and said if the mighty works that had been done in that city had been done in Sodom, it would have remained, he said, to this day. He wept over Jerusalem. "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that stonest the prophets." And he said, I would have gathered thy children together as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and you would not. And so he wept over that great city where the presence of God had been known for centuries. And so Jesus was saddened often at the hardness of heart of his disciples. And so Jesus suffered greatly. He suffered in his temptation, and the Bible reveals, of course, the great suffering that he endured as he went to the cross. In the book of Hebrews chapter 5, beginning at verse 7, "Who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, was heard in that he feared. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered." And so Jesus showed great virtue in suffering. In chapter 12 of the book of Hebrews, it is said of him that he endured the cross, despising the shame, He, for the joy set before him, endured the cross. And the bottom line, as we said in our auditorium class this morning, to really living a virtuous life is endurance. It's putting up with the things day by day, with the conviction in our mind, I can do this. God will see me through. And if we start out with that conviction that I know I'm going to arrive at the finish line, God is going to be with me, and so whatever comes, He will help me through it. Endurance. There's virtue there. And Jesus illustrates in His life perfectly the fact that He endured it all. We sing in a song, He paid it all. And so Jesus endured everything, the Hebrew writer says. No temptation has taken us but such as is common to man. We will not find a single thing to which we can point and say, Jesus never suffered this way or never endured anything this hard. Isn't so. He is our perfect example of virtue in suffering. And so we conclude with these thoughts that Jesus was able to be the paragon of virtue. Everything that we can think about as we think about strength to live our lives for God comes down to following Jesus. In speaking, in remaining silent under certain circumstances, in enduring every kind of suffering, Jesus endured. He just hung on. A man who many of you know was visiting with us a few weeks ago, and he said he had decided to pursue a higher degree, a doctoral degree, and he asked for advice. And I said, well, don't worry about the fact about whether or not you can do it. You certainly have the smarts to do it, or they wouldn't have let you in the program. What you got to do is endure. Just endure. Whatever they ask you to do, say, sure, I can do that. If a professor says, read these five books and come back and we'll talk next week about it, say, fine, I'll do that. Do that. So you just got to do it. You got to endure. And that is the way it is in the Christian life. And Jesus will help us. And we will have, if we look to Him, the moral strength with which to endure. But you've got to begin, and we begin in faithful service to God as we attempt to add to our faith virtue, and then as we follow in the Christian life, that strength to decide and to live for Him and with Him will be ours. He said in Matthew chapter 10, verse 22, you will be hated by all men for my name's sake. But he that endureth to the end, the same shall be saved. And so it's about enduring, about faithfully following Him to the end. Is that where you are now in your life? Are you a Christian? Are you hanging in there and enduring whatever comes day by day? Who for the joy set before you, you are enduring things. If you are not, we encourage you tonight to become a Christian and to live for Him who died for you so that finally heaven can be your home. If we can assist you in that beginning, or if you need to make a new beginning, we'd be happy to pray with you and for you.